Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on the topic of how to hire the right job candidates. No collection agency can be successful without having a group of dedicated, motivated, and passionate employees. How you identify those individuals and hire them is critical to achieving that success. We're fortunate to have a trio of senior executives from successful collection agencies who are here today to share their experiences with us. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning. You'll get the chance to hear from Christopher Rickman and learn more about Peak Revenue Learning a little bit later in our program. I'd like to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AR.net is a network of professionals for the collections and debt buying industry. Since 2008, the site has sought to deliver high quality news and information via a networking platform that allows members to communicate and interact with one another in ways that they're not able to do anywhere else. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Gordon Beck is the CEO for Diversified Consultants, where he has been employed for 19 years. He's known as a motivator, educator, and great public speaker in the industry, participating in panels, debates, and several individual speeches at industry-related events, as well as contributing articles and content to several call center publications. His treatment of his employees, the amazing culture and atmosphere he provides them, and never straying away from the family mentality is what Gordon will tell you is the secret sauce of DCI, which has led to the company's meteoric growth, represented by offices opening all over the country, and DCI breaking the 1,000 FTE mark. Mike DiCarpio is the director of collections at RevSolve, a collection agency based in Scottsdale, Arizona that focuses on the medical and healthcare market. Mike has been with RevSolve for the past 4 years. Prior to that, he spent 20 years working at Amcall Systems as the director of recovery services and vice president of operations. Mike's core focus has been staff development and motivation, and the paramount piece to that has been identifying the right people up front. Mike Legas is the president and chief financial officer of Delta Outsource Group. He has spent more than 2 decades in collections and management roles and is responsible for all billing, collections, and accounting functions for Delta. He has also managed credit and collection staffs in multiple locations and has managed portfolios of up to $500 million. He has also achieved a Lean Six Sigma Green Belt certification. Thank you to Gordon, Mike, and Mike for joining us today and sharing your thoughts and insights. Let's jump right into the discussion. And Mike DiCarpio, I'll start with you. Can you give us some background and share some details of your hiring process?
Certainly, absolutely. Obviously, it's like everybody else. You start with the advertising of your position and then the vetting out of the resumes in which you receive. Initially, you know, I don't want to spend a whole lot of time. Everybody knows how to look at a resume, but what you want to look for in that resume aspect, though, is are you looking at professional interviewers, people who are job hopping, looking at different jobs? You know, we want to weed those people out because we know that they're not going to stick around. When we do find someone that we want, we bring them in. We have a battery of tests. We do a Wunderlich assessment, which will determine their cognitive abilities, whether they can actually perform the functions, learn new functions, and do what we need them to do when we get them here. We also use a test called People Decisions. People Decisions is basically a personality profile. It goes through about a dozen different personality traits, and it's going to determine whether or not they have the aptitude to actually do the job of a debt collector. And then from there, we go through the process of an interview. We have a phone interview through our recruiting department. We schedule, if it gets through that, we schedule a second interview with our management team. And then from there, the interview is broken down into two components. Can they do the job? And the second piece is, will they fit into our culture? So there's a series of questions that determine whether or not they can do the job. The second set is determine whether or not they fit our culture, because everybody's got their own culture and in their environment. Excuse me. Is that what you're looking for, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a couple of follow-up questions, but Gordon, I'll ask you, does what you do at DCI differ in any way from what Mike's doing? And if so, how?
Yeah, we don't give them any type of test that would give them, a personality assessment. And our lawyers have basically kind of shunned against that. These types of tests, although I think that they're great and I'd love to use them, there's a lot of people that think or can't be proven to be 100% accurate. And if you use that as a means to not hire someone, they think that it could come back to bite us. So we don't do that. To utilize the interview, that is obviously the most important thing, the face-to-face interaction. But with that said, just like Mike said, everything's the same in the process that he mentioned, except for that part. We don't use the testing.
And Mike Loggis, what about you at Delta Outsource Group?
Yeah, I'm similar to Gordon in the fact that we don't use any personality testing. Just because I think that's kind of from a collections perspective, I just don't see any value in that Delta. And really what we really focus on, we go through some of the similar screening processes as far as a phone interview, and then when we bring them in, I like to use situational questions, especially with experienced collectors, just how they respond to that. Who have no collection.
Mike, I think we're having a hard time hearing you.
Let me pick up rather than do this. Is this better?
There we go. Much better. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, good. So then on not inexperienced collectors, we kind of put them in situations to see how they would react to adversity, how they money motivating questions, things like that.
Got it. Thank you very much. So this the testing seems to be an interesting point of differentiation between the three companies. So Mike DiCarpio, let me come back to you. How long have you been doing the testing? I mean, what can you give us a sense of what kind of results you're getting and what kind of results you're looking for?
Certainly. I've actually been using these tests for about 15 years now. Started when I was at AmCall, introduced it here as well. There's actually a consultant that was used prior to my getting to RevSolve. And again, the name of the company is People Decisions Incorporated. And so basically, the interview process is this. You're talking to people who you want to be able to manipulate other human beings, which means that they can manipulate an interview process as well. So how are you going to determine whether or not they're giving you the insights that you really need without having some resource to actually evaluate the truth behind it? People are going to tell you what you want to hear in an interview process. They're predetermined to manipulate you into hiring them in the first place. So if you don't have something to look at that gives you some evaluation of their personality, then it's a little bit more of a difficult way to traverse through that. So the test that we use, it looks at assertiveness, social comfort, competitiveness, goal orientation, security, attention to detail, compliance to structure, customer orientation, energy, company orientation, resourcefulness, and the sales motivation. And how these metrics go into, and everyone's going to have unique metrics on each of these. Everything that we do can be trained and taught to other people. So what we have to do is if there's a deficiency in any of these categories, we have to ask the question specific to those deficiencies to know whether or not we've got someone that has been trained by another organization that can do and fit into the role that we have for them, or whether or not it's something that's probably not going to work. My experience has been that this test is very accurate. Are there exceptions to these? Absolutely. Do we want to hire to the exception? Probably not, but there are always exceptions. But these tests, these metrics always prove to be really pretty accurate.
Got it. A couple of one quick housekeeping note I forgot to mention. This is an audio-only webinar, so there are no visual components. So if you're not seeing anything on your screen, there's nothing wrong. Also, if you have questions, we encourage you to send them in. There's a question tab on your Zoom control panel that will allow you to type in questions and submit them electronically. We will get to those throughout the webinar and definitely save time at the end for for dealing with those if we haven't got to them yet. So please submit any questions you might have. Gordon, let me come back to you. You know, what Mike was saying with the test is that it offers some sort of objective data, not sort of subjective look and feel, but something objective, an actual sort of number or information. Are you looking for that when you're hiring, or is it for you, is it more about the subjective?
Well, my situation is a little different. We are more volume based, and obviously Portland, Oregon, Jacksonville, Florida, Louisville, Kentucky, those are my locations. With him in Scottsdale, and you know, I can tell you right now, undoubtedly the average income there is probably double in a lot of areas that we operate in. It might be more intuitive for him to utilize these types of tools. But I want to say something, you know, and Mike had made a comment that, you know, they are looking to hire people that manipulate, and we don't look for really somebody to do that. I understand that type of collection. We're the more on the customer service end of it. And to us, we look for things that, you know, people that have been around people. I don't look for anybody that's done collections before. We look for people in the hospitality industry. We look for people that have, you know, done car sales. We look for people that have had interactions with people on a daily basis. Because once they've broken the ice, our business and the way that we're governed, it's basically a scripted industry now. So to be able to allow our agents to do what I've always done, and that is paint the sky bluer than it is, we don't live in a day and age that you can get away with that. So at the end of the day, we are just looking for the human experience behind it. Do they have the personality? Are they afraid to talk and interact with people? If they're not, I can make anyone a bill collector that has just that one common trait.
Just to follow up, you said you're not looking, you don't hire anyone with previous collections experience?
No, I'm not saying we don't. I'm saying we don't look for it. If they come in and they've got previous collection experience, the interview is going to be quite a bit longer, because I can tell you that we are by the book. Without a shadow of a doubt, there's no gray line for DCI. Everything we do is 100% to the lay of the land and the law of the land. And I just don't want to hire somebody that I have to, you know, hope that I've got to be able to mold into what I'm looking for when they've got bad habits. It's so hard to break in this industry. So we do a lot more follow-up in terms of the references, and I reach out to people that I know in the industry and that are in Jacksonville and in other areas, and hopefully I can get a good beat on who I'm dealing with. And when I say I mean my team. I don't do that anymore. But, no, we do not like to hire people that have previous experience whatsoever.
Mike Loggus, maybe you can tell us, so take us through how the hiring process at Delta has changed, you know, through the years. I know you're relatively new there, but maybe you could sort of talk about, you know, what you've seen and what you've heard and how that, you know, how the hiring process has evolved over time.
One of the things I'll tell you is before I was here at Delta, I know there was a kind of a two-pronged effort. There was a kind of a throw the mud against the wall and see what sticks hiring process, and then there was an experienced collector, almost recruitment going on. Since I've come on board, we've kind of refined our process a little bit. One of the things that I can tell you is similar to Gordon. I see collections as a sales job, very similar to a sales job, and they need to have a personality. They need to have a ability to relate to the consumer on the phone and be able to talk to them in a professional, courteous manner. We have zero tolerance here for treating the consumer anything less than as a customer, because in the end, they kind of are our customer. And so we really kind of push the personality side of things, and we tailor our review process about, you know, people who come to us tend to have had jobs somewhere else. If they're interacting with the general public, they have a good personality, they're engaging during the interview process. And then we use the situational questions to get a sense of their personality. In previous life, I did use the company I work for, use the personality tests, and it depended on the role we were looking for. So I really think that those personality tests are role specific. And from a credit collections perspective and the portfolio that Delta has, we just can't find a personality test that we think that works best for Delta and the diversified portfolio that we have from, you know, we have a lot of commercial business as well, and that's completely different than a consumer. So really it's tailored to, we tailor our interview process to that sales angle because you're really selling to that person on the phone to pay the bill.
You mentioned situational questions. Can you give us an example or two of what you're, you know, what's the type of questions you're asking?
Well, one of the things that we like to do is we say, give us an example where you dealt with an individual in a previous life who was unhappy with the performance of the company or a product that you sold them, and how did you handle it? What did you do to rectify the situation? And a lot of the people who come to us have previous customer service experience. You know, I, just to be honest, I hired a young lady recently who was a checker at a grocery store, and she's doing very well because she interacted with consumers. She talked to them. A lot of times they would voice discontent to her. So she gave us an example of where she made a customer happy, where she resolved an issue with that customer, and we were very pleased with her answer. So those kind of situational questions, right? Somebody owes you. We've actually told people somebody owes you money and they haven't paid you yet, but you know they owe a lot of people. How do you get the money from them? Give us an example of a conversation you would have. So we use those kind of questions to for our candidates.
Excellent. Thank you. At this point, I want to pause the discussion, and I'm going to introduce the sponsor for today's webinar, and that is Christopher Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, and ask him to say a few words. Chris?
Thank you, Mike, and hello, everyone. I am grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. My company provides KnowledgeLink. It's a web-based employee education and compliance training application to many companies in the collection industry. KnowledgeLink is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge expected of them when interacting with consumers. KnowledgeLink automatically builds documentation of the compliance training efforts of the company for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I've spent most of my career on your side of the desk. I've worked in the collection industry for more than 30 years, most of that time in an executive management of a collection firm. KnowledgeLink was created to address many of the shortcomings in training and compliance that I saw as COO and CEO of a company. Use KnowledgeLink to implement an ongoing continuous training cycle, reinforcing the knowledge you expect your staff members to have before it begins to fade from memory. Present collection client or company policies to your staff members during onboarding training or at ongoing recurring schedules, where they are to acknowledge they have read and understood those policies. Present tests during training events to validate learning or on recurring schedules to certify staff knowledge in areas you wish, such as the FDCPA or HIPAA. Use KnowledgeLink during training events to present videos or slideshows, followed by a set of questions to validate participation and learning. In summary, KnowledgeLink will close knowledge gaps, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, document for prospective and existing clients, regulators, and auditors of your company's proactive role in preventing compliance nonconformities. If any of you will be at ACA's Fall Forum, please stop by and see us at Booth 21. To find out more about us, please visit peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chris. Now let's jump back into our discussion. And I want to jump around a little bit and actually sort of do a back to the future type thing here. We started with the hiring process, but let's back up a little bit and start with how you sort of get candidates' resumes, applications in the first place. And Gordon, I'll ask you, can you talk a little bit about where or what you need to advertise about your job opening?
So we do several things, obviously. One of the things that works great for us is our local publications. They're all online. For instance, in Jacksonville, we have Jack's Jobs. In Louisville, we have Louisville Help Wanted. Those we feel are really, really good because the applicants that go there are the ones that are looking for a job in Jacksonville. They're not feeling like they're absorbed by the big monsters of the world, the monster.coms, et cetera. We don't use any type of a staffing company unless I'm in a pinch with a client and they need 300 seats overnight. So generally, that's our main way. Now, we have done everything from TV. We've done radio. Radio has been a very good one. Of course, the newspapers and things like that are a thing of the past. One that we really do use that's a little bit bigger that we've had awesome success with lately, especially in our Louisville branch where we're trying to hire 1,000 people, and that's Indeed. So I'm not sure if anybody's dealt with Indeed, but that's been a good one too. But our bread and butter is the local publications that actually are looking for people that live in Jacksonville and want to work in Jacksonville, Louisville or Portland.
Excellent. What about you, Mike DiCarpio? Are you similar in terms of how you advertise and promote your job openings?
Yeah, it's pretty similar. We also use Indeed. We have a great deal of success through Indeed. We use jobbing.com as well as Craigslist. Craigslist is actually a good resource for us as well. Probably one of the best resources that we have is word of mouth. When we do we're very conscientious again as to who we bring in and make sure they fit into the culture that we have here, and they have people that they can recommend as well.
Do you offer anything like an incentive program to people to refer candidates to you or anything like that?
We do. We actually have a referral program where we actually give them a monetary bonus for people that make it past 90 days. We give the referral and the referee, if they both are here after a year, we actually give them a 65-inch TV.
Wow. I mean, how many are you handing out a lot of TVs?
We've given out about 10 of them in the last 2 years. So that's 5 sets of referrals.
Excellent. And you, Mike, with Delta, does your experience or what you do to advertise, is it any different?
No, the only thing that I would say I do additional to that is we have had open houses and job fairs here at our office. So we advertise, online and through social media. We also encourage our employees at that time to have their referrals come in. So we'll open in the evening and interview candidates as they come in. We've had some pretty good success. We've had 2 so far since I've been here and pulled about 4 or 5 people out of each.
Mike DiCarpio, you advertise a job. How many resumes do you normally get in? And can you talk about sort of how many candidates you look to? Is there a certain number of candidates you're looking for to kind of make it to the interview stage?
It's not necessarily a ratio. The thing with Indeed is that you have to constantly refresh those ads because it shows the number of days that it's been since you've put the ad out there. And the later, if it's been out there for 2 or 3 weeks, then you get less and less people respond to it. But if you refresh it, and make it more current, then you get a big influx in the number of people that respond to it. Craigslist is pretty consistent, and everything else is pretty consistent. And it is the biggest one that has the influence with refresh rates. We'll go through a few hundred resumes to set up maybe a handful of interviews. Here, a lot of people don't like working during the summer, and it's kind of a little warm outside, so they're trying to get out from the car washes and the roofing business and into the collection world where it's air conditioned. So it also is it's seasonal.
So can you talk? You said a few hundred resumes. You said to a mm-hmm. few interviews. What's that
Correct.
Screening process like?
Well, we're looking for skill-based correlation. If they've got sales, if they've done some type of call center activity, that's always important. We're looking at tenure. If people are only staying at jobs for a few months or less than a year, then we want to weed those out because they're not going to be committed to us any more than they have anybody else. We're also looking for gaps. If there's gaps between jobs, you know, what's going on with that? And just those type of things. Looking for grammatical errors. You know, and I don't mean to be smart, but some of these resumes look like they should have been written in crayon rather than sent to us in any other form. So we're looking for grammatics. We're looking for some of these things.
Gordon, let me ask you about that. Do you get resumes that maybe should have been written in crayon?
You know, we do see that. We call it run, spot, run. You know, we see these run-on sentences and things of that nature. Obviously, we're not going to call those people. We need people that can type fluently, people that can speak educatedly, don't have any pens or papers. So I don't care how they write, but if they're typing the way that they're typing, then we know that this is somebody that in training is going to be a lot slower to deal with. And I don't have the luxury of, you know, I could go through a few hundred and only bring in five or six. So our screening process is probably not as intense as some of the other guys because we're hiring somewhere in the ballpark of about 80 people every 2 weeks. So it's definitely been a challenge for us to find the fine line between screening and making sure that's not coming in the door and making sure we have enough people to handle the volume of work.
How do you manage that fine line? I mean, what's the, is it art? Is it science? What do you do?
Well, you manage it through your training because at the end of the day, the people that your recruiters bring into you, no matter what, that's who you have and the trainers have to develop them. So what I look for is attrition in the first 90 days. And of course, we look at their figures. We look at their compliance scores, their QA scores, and we have an entire analytics department that does nothing but give me data on people that have been there 180 days and less. And as I see the ebbs and flows and the trends, taking into case the seasonality that you have in the fall and, of course, tax season, I'm able to tell right then and there whether or not we're screening appropriately. And trust me, it's a constant battle because we try not to incent the recruiters on the volume rather than the quality of the people they bring us. But they are also judged on the quantity because, again, we have we get over 1.5 million counts a month. We have no choice but to get people to work them.
Got it. Mike Logan, can you talk a little bit about the screening process at Delta Airport Group?
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of feedback on this. Is anybody else?
I think you're okay now. There was a little bit before.
Okay. So the screening process, you know, the first 90 days is key, right? Like Gordon, we're watching the numbers. We're watching, you know, attempts. We're watching, you know, are they getting contacts? Are they converting those contacts? Their average payment, those kind of things. We're looking at those as well as they go through the process. And, you know, one of the things that we focus on is if their attempts are down, why are their attempts down? What are they doing? So the manager, the training manager is really responsible for making sure that these individuals are brought up to speed. And if not, kind of making that decision of a go, no go with that particular individual. So, you know, the screening process, just to give an example, we kind of did an analysis of that last month. You know, we'll interview 25 people, hire 10 of them, and within 90 days, we'll have five of them left, if we're lucky, maybe three. And that just seems to be the process that agencies go through, or from my experience, agencies go through when you're bringing people in, right? It's a, you know, you can screen, you can test, you can do all this and try to narrow it down. But frequently, you know, the individuals that come in too, a lot of times they make the decision that this is not what they want to do. Collections as a job can carry a stigma with certain people and they don't want to do it. And so they make the choice themselves before we even had a chance. And the sad thing is I've had people who were very good at it but didn't like it and would leave. They were well on their way to being a successful collector and just decided this is not what I want to do for a living. And I would tell you that the difference between my generation and the current millennial generation, it's a challenge, giving them that, millennials typically want to be, feel like they're a part of something bigger. And so one of the things that we've done here at Delta to help make them feel like they're part of something bigger is we definitely try to get involved in our community, junior achievement, charitable drives and things like that, so that our millennial employees feel like we're not just after the cold hard buck. We're trying to do something more and give back to our community. So that's kind of the angle we've taken. And we found some success with that with some of our younger collectors.
Hey, Mike, this is Mike DiCarpio. If you don't mind, may I interject real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a couple of things that I'm kind of hearing a common theme with Gordon and the other Mike here that I'm sorry, it's a little concerning to me. And you guys don't do any of the personality test up front. And you're describing 50% turnover within the first 90 days or 180 days from employment. That's the reason why I do the tests. I do the tests so that I can determine whether or not someone has the aptitude to do the job. If I try to hire someone who has a low social comfort and put them on 100 to 200 telephone calls a day, I'm putting them in an uncomfortable environment. They're going to sit in an interview and tell me that they can do the job because they want the job. But we have to evaluate during that process whether they actually have the aptitude to do the job. And that's the core function of doing the test up front. The secondary piece of that is once we've made the decision to hire them, then those tests give us insight into their personalities to tell us how we can best manage them once we've made that decision. And so there's a lot of, I mean, I know you guys said that your legal teams, you know, shy away from these things, but there's a lot of positive reasons to do those tests.
I'd like to also comment on that because I want to reiterate, I don't disagree with the testing at all. I actually want to do the testing. The reason I basically was told by our legal team not to do it was because I brought it up because I wanted to do it. So, you know, I do think it can be good, and I think it could be something that could help bring down our overall attrition. But I really do count on my team and my culture, my atmosphere to bring people in and keep people that want to be there. And I think, you know, regardless of a test, I have to tell you, you know, if you got a great first couple layers, a training, a nesting program, and you have an atmosphere that's, you know, conducive to positive people, you know, when you walk on our floor, one of the things I take pride in is that it's like something most people would never even dream of in a call center. And our people are smiling every day. They want to be there. And I really have to rely on that because with the number of FTE that we have, our legal team, which is Sessions Law Firm, they're one of the biggest law firms that handles very large agencies in this country. They're very big against it because they are ultra conservative in their thinking that if it can bring a class action lawsuit, or there's a chance to bring a class action lawsuit, that we should not do it. And, you know, I might still do it because what you're telling me today, I think it's great information and I love the feedback, but I just want to reiterate, especially to the audience, that I think these tests could be great. I just would vet them through your legal team.
Yeah.
Well, Mike DiCarpio, let me go back and ask you, you know, what are you looking at in terms of, you know, we saw the numbers in terms of how many people are interviewed, to how many people are hired, how many people are left after 90 days with Mike Loggins and Delta Outsource. How does that sort of compare with what you guys have?
Well, it's a little different. We're not hiring that many people. And the reason we're not hiring that many people is we don't have that many vacancies to replace. I look at hiring in two ways. One, do I have empty seats? If I have empty seats, I need to fill them, but I need to fill them with the right people. And two, of the seats that are occupied, what opportunities do I have for improvement? Is there someone, I mean, we're always going to have people who are behind everyone else. It doesn't mean they're doing badly. It just means that maybe you're doing very well, but you have people who are lagging behind that can possibly be replaced. So is there someone out there that I can actually fill someone who's lagging behind? It's called improvement. It's called process improvement. And so I'm looking to improve our staff constantly. And if that means that there's someone who's been here for 3 years that potentially has reached its plateau, then I need to replace that person. And I need to find someone who's got a better skill set, a better set of traits that that can fulfill that. So we're looking at probably every week we have a training class, and we generally have two or three people in each of those classes.
And most of those, like the attrition isn't very high with those, or what is the attrition rate with those?
No, I mean, the attrition we have, I'm probably going to raise some eyebrows, but our turnover rate is less than 40%.
Well, that is good. Nick Loggins, let me come back to something you said in terms of using the numbers, 3 to 5 left after 90 days. Is it just a matter of, like, you know, a batting average in baseball where you're not going to bat 1,000% and your best bet is to bat, like, you know, the best hitters bat 300 and that's what kind of what you're looking for? Or do you think there are ways to improve and refine the model?
There's always ways to improve and refine the model. I mean, that's a, you know, a culture of continuous improvement, right? As Mike said before, right? We're always looking to improve our batting average, whether it comes from performance with clients, whether it's from hiring employees. Delta doesn't have a lot of turnover, and typically when we're in hiring, it's usually project-based related. You know, and our average tenure of our collector right now is running around 4.5 years. We incent collectors to stay by offering them reduced bonuses or reduced bonus goals. We offer prizes, additional vacation time, those things. It's pretty typical of I think many of my colleagues. But I think, you know, when you're looking and what I prefer personally and is to bring somebody in who's never done it before. Experienced collectors have bad habits. And some of those habits you can't get out of them. And then you're looking at risk, especially if some of those bad habits tend to violate certain laws and restrictions. So I prefer to bring somebody in who has no experience and invest time and effort in those individuals. The personality testing that Mike does, right, I have mixed feelings about. And it's also a cost-benefit analysis and how much it really is saving me versus doing it ourselves. So we will look at that in the future because I do think, you know, listening to Mike, I would like to reduce that percentage. But is it the personality testing? Is it the individuals who are doing the review and hiring? You know, we're going to look at all of those things and continue to look at those things to try to reduce the cost of hiring and training new employees because, as everybody knows, it's cheaper to keep somebody than to replace them if you can, especially if they're a productive employee. So keeping our existing collectors happy and focused and continuing to perform is really our primary focus so that we don't have to hire new people.
So another question I would love to ask, you know, Mike and Gordon, this is Mike DiCarpio again. How much of your company, how much of your bottom line do you spend in providing tools to your management team and your collection staff to be successful?
When you say tools, can you be a little bit more specific?
I mean, yeah, reporting tools, computers, yeah, things that give them the insights, the dialing programs, whatever tools to make them successful.
So we utilize LiveBox. They all have the dashboard. They all have laptops. They all have except their emails from their company iPhones. We have 88 managers. Their average tenure is about 10 years. When they become a manager, we keep, you know, obviously those are the lifers, the career-oriented people. I could tell you that from an analytics and reporting standpoint, though, something you mentioned about the tools, we have an entire analytics department that does all the reporting for the managers. They don't have to worry about any of it. Anything they want to know, they can know. And we also provide them reports that we want them to have on a daily basis.
Okay.
But I do agree that it's not giving tools to your people to be successful. It's hard for them to manage and to do so successfully.
Right. And the reason I ask that question is because we all invest greatly in providing tools for our staff, our existing people. That's another reason why I would support these tests, because then you're providing your recruiters tools to make wise decisions.
Can you share with the audience and with us who you go through to obtain these tests, who you're purchasing them from?
Yeah, I barely heard you. I'm sorry.
He asked who you're purchasing the tests from.
Yes, it's a company called People Decisions Incorporated.
Gotcha.
Someone asked a question about that. Sorry, Michael, interrupt for 1 second. Is there a particular test that you use through People Decisions, or did you create your own test through them?
Actually, the person who put this together has a PhD, and he actually owned a collection agency in Houston. And he put it together for his own staffing needs and has then since put it out there for everyone else. He's got different layers of tests based on skill-based. The one that I use through them is the supervisory survey result. And I've already read out all the different personality areas that it evaluates.
Have you used any others?
Yeah,
have you used any other vendors or personality tests?
I've not used any others since the 15 years that I've used them. We've used other ones in the past, but it's been so long that I don't really even recall enough about it to speak knowledgeably.
Mike, over the 15 years, has he kind of conformed and made changes within the basis of the testing to more fit and suit the type of people that you're getting in over the 15 years you've been doing it?
He has made modifications and changes, but for the most part, it's been pretty consistent.
We've just seen a big increase in, like was mentioned earlier, about the millennials and the entitlement. Mm-hmm. This used to be a commission-oriented business where, you know, a good agent could care less about his regular pay. Now we have people that work all up front and don't want to have to work, you know, not only for that money, but for a bonus check. And it does challenging. I'm just curious if this test, because after today, I'm considering trying it, and I'd like to see what it would do for us. And I'm just curious if this gentleman basically owns the product, it does do things to kind of go with the changing.
Well, you know, Gordon, you kind of tailed off at the end, but I think I got the gist of your question. In regards to millennials, there's a lot of beliefs out there. I'm personally one that I don't necessarily believe in the millennial classification. These people don't look at life any differently than we did when we were their age. It's just our perspective of them has changed a little bit. Now, there are some subtle differences between the cultures because of the way that the world is today compared to where it was when we were kind of going through it. But what I've done with the millennials is I've actually embraced them, put them in, and said, hey, I actually had them write our ads. Part of the customer, but as far as the ads to be able to do the I look for any different traits from a millennial than I would anyone else. It's what can we do culturally within our world that then caters to the millennials, that makes it an inviting place for them to stay and makes them feel like they're a part of our world here.
How did the ad change when you asked the millennials to start writing it?
You know what? It's really kind of funny. I'll be glad to shoot you a comparison of the before and after. It's basically the wording, and that's the only thing that changed. The description of the job and how it's described to younger people is different than how it was described by me, who, you know, I'm almost 50 years old. So when I write the ad, I'm writing it for someone who's like me. They write it for people who are like them. So they use different words. They kind of excited it a little bit. They made it a little bit more jazzy and picked it up a little bit. But I'll be glad to shoot you the before and after of the two ads.
It's interesting. I mean, Gordon, let me ask you, do you look at sort of generational differences with your ads, or do you kind of write different ads for different generations if you're looking to hire different people?
You know, we've not done that. We've really never had the problem until the last 2 or 3 years. Our attrition has become quite a bit more, and, you know, the need and want for more money, you know, obviously is front work in collections in the large market category for 3 straight years. So we give an unbelievable environment. We have a lot of fun. We believe in getting the job done, but you know, collections is a difficult job. It's not, there's no glamour in it whatsoever. There's a lot more requirements now. You're not just getting on the phone and, you know, getting money from a consumer. It's all the laws, regulations, all the statements from NACHA, all the things you have to do in your verification. It's just a totally different animal now. But, you know, the way we look at it is, if you don't want to be here, then by all means, you're not going to be a success to us. But we are in the world in telecom with our yields. No way that I could give them these large salaries up front. They have to earn. We have the best bonus structure. I feel like I can compete with anybody in the industry, and people make a lot of bonus. I have collectors that make 6 figures, but at the end of the day, they have to earn it. And when I say the millennial, and then I have 100% verifiable proof of the people that we document the reasons for leaving, and I can tell you undoubtedly, they want to be given something before they earn it, and that's a fact, and that's what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Mike Loggins, let me come back to you. On the topic of previous experience, is it like a red light stop if a person doesn't get hired, or what's the process if someone comes to you with previous industry experience?
Well, we vet them through the situational interviews. I mean, that's kind of how we screen them. And I'll be honest with you, one of the things that, you know, or the way our bonus structure is, if they come in and ask for a lot of base salary and or base wage, and they don't, and they want a higher bonus goal, I typically won't hire them. My experience has been they come in and they fall far short of what they thought. So if they refuse to drop, and what I tell people is, you're going to make the same amount of money if you hit that goal. You're just going to need to earn it. And if they don't want to do that, similar to Gordon, then I'm not interested.
Everything so far we've talked about has kind of been sort of, I guess, recruiting one way, that is, you know, putting out an ad and then, candidates or referrals coming in. Does anybody, and I'll throw this open to any of the three panelists, do any of you do like sort of almost like sort of free agent recruiting, where you identify somebody you know or someone who, you know, who's been referred to you is possibly interested, and you go out and try and, you know, recruit them and attract them?
Mike, I can tell you undoubtedly I do not do that, because I have a gentleman's agreement with two agencies local to me, that's ERC and Stellar Recovery, that we just do not do that to one another. You know, we have to work in harmony in our city. And I cannot say that I haven't done that in Portland, because it's much tougher to find good people there. But that's the agencies that we're probably recruiting from are people or in the business industry. I don't know, but I still don't look at it as a good practice. I kind of look at that as going out and poaching other people's. And I don't want people to do that to me. So I have an agreement with my people locally and our competitors locally that we just do not. Now, if somebody was terminated or if they quit, if they're no longer working there and they do apply, that's a different story. We trade people all the time. But as far as going out and recruiting and offering a few bucks more or whatever have you, we don't do that.
Thank you. Just to the panel, to those who are listening in, we're getting close to the top of the hour and getting close to your last chance to submit any questions. If you have any questions, please submit them now via your control panel, and we will try to get to them before the end of the event. Excuse me. Mike DiCarpio, I want to come back to you with a question. Do you look at the cost? How much it costs to hire each candidate? And if so, how closely are you measuring that or monitoring that? And how has that number changed?
Well, obviously turnover has a great cost to it. There's so many aspects of turnover that I think we all know what that bottom line is. The biggest cost for me is the secondary cost of the time management from my management team. If my management team is investing in someone who doesn't stay more than 30, 60, 90 days, then that's taken away from the rest of my employee base. You know, it's hard to measure that cost. It's hard to put a direct number on that. But you look at your bottom line and your, you know, your success. What's your recovery percentages? If you lower your turnover rate, obviously those rates go up because number one, you have skilled labor that's been doing this consistently on and on. You're not having to retrain the same things over and over again. Secondly, you have management focus on people who are actually here working. So there's a lot of indirect costs that make it very difficult to put a number to. But yeah, I'm always focused on money. Bottom line, is always what's paramount to this world.
What about you, Mike Loggett?
Turnover is it's expensive. I mean, to make Mike's point, it's just expensive. So retaining employees is a high priority here at Delta. And it's so much easier. As far as, recruiting, back to Gordon's point, I was out of the industry for a while, so most of my contacts are gone. But my staff has several contacts, and I can tell you right now, it has not been a good thing for us. The people who have been recruited, it has not been a success. I can tell you of about three people that I'm aware of that we just have not had success with. And so I'm very reluctant to bring on somebody just because somebody knows them and they have experience in collections. And I'm not getting into a bidding war either. I just don't think that's productive because I think, in the end, they're going to leave. The loyalty has got to be there. And I do look for loyalty, and we reward loyalty to those employees who have stayed with us for a long tenure.
Yeah,
how do you know that someone's going to be let me ask one quick follow-up question, Mike. How do you know someone's going to be loyal?
That is an excellent question. And it's, that I don't, maybe the personality test that Mike referenced to help tell us that is something that's been a challenge. I guess my focus here is, we reward those employees who have been with us for a while and that have performed. And that word of mouth gets out and gets out to new employees who come in. And one of the things that we do like to do here that I didn't mention is I like to have those tenured employees almost mentor new ones. Those employees who've been here a long time, they have a positive attitude. They love coming to work every day, and having them meet with and spend some time with those new people who are coming on board. And that's a relatively new thing for us. We just started that within the last quarter. And the most recent class that we came in, of the five who came in, we still have four. And that's going on 4 months right now. So we're a smaller agency, so we don't hire as frequently, but that mentorship really has, I'm really seeing that be a productive way of taking a tenured long-term employee and pairing them with a new employee. It really helps them get acclimated to Delta's culture. It helps them understand some of the nuances of collections. Because as my colleagues have said, it's a hard business, and to have somebody that they can turn to who's not their manager for a little bit of guidance and help has been, it's really starting to bear some fruit for us.
Great. This is Gordon. We've got a few minutes. Yeah, go ahead, Gordon.
Mike, it said, how do you know if you're loyal? And that's a great, I do agree that's a great question. My kind of mindset is if they're wanting to talk to us about a job while they're already working at another agency, if they're not loyal to that agency, what makes me think they're going to be loyal to me? So a lot of times that's kind of how I judge whether or not they would be loyal is based on what they're doing currently to the agency that they work at.
Well said. We got a few minutes left, so let me try and get to some of these questions here. This one I'll throw open to any of the panelists. Has anyone tried ZipRecruiter for collectors?
I have. I didn't have very much success with it.
I have not.
I have not either.
Here's a good one. Do you see more and more new hires asking for work from home, the work from home option?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I haven't.
Our clients won't allow it.
To the one who said yes, do you allow work from home?
No.
Okay.
But
like they
ask
see more people ask. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Here's not necessarily a hiring question, but what type of benefits do you offer your collectors, including paid time off?
The first year they get 40 hours of vacation, 40 hours of sick. We have a 401k, but they can't contribute for a year. Health benefits after 90 days, typical stuff.
Same for Delta.
The same. One thing I'd like to throw out there, we about 4 years ago started providing Aflac, not as a change or a replacement for their primary medical, but for accidents and things of that nature. We have an average early to mid 20s, and it's been an enormous benefit. The employees love it, so it's fairly inexpensive, and for the company, it's just a little bit of back office work. But for those people listening in, it's a great benefit to add on to the ones you already have.
One last question on bonus programs: do you base it on individual performance, team goal, or both?
Individual.
Excellent. Well, we're just about out of time. I promised everyone we'd be done by the top of the hour, and we're there. So before I let everyone go, I want to thank Gordon, Mike, and Mike for their insights and their time. I thought the discussion was really insightful. I know I learned a lot. I've got pages of notes that I took. So I hope everyone else can walk away with some knowledge and some new tips or ideas, or at least questions that they might want to go back and ask in their own office about how they may want to do things a little bit differently going forward. This webinar would not have been possible without the participation. I also want to thank Chris Rickman and Peak Revenue Learning, for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.peakrevenuelearning.com to learn more about the company, and be sure to contact Chris if you have any questions. His phone number is 803-521-0030. Thank you to everybody who participated in today's webinar. Thanks to those who asked questions. Thanks to those who listened. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the near future. A recording of this event will be made available in the next few days, so you can check the site out for that as well. And please be sure to enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.